Good morning, sir, again, for the record this time. Would you state your name and agency number for the record, sir?
Stephen Wesley Ward, TLC number 108103.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. You appear for the Arizona Board of Executive Committee in as much as you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412B411 hearing today. That is to be considered for paroling you to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Is that your understanding why you appear before the board today, sir?
Yes, sir.
And as you can see, there are four board members participating in your hearing today. I would like to introduce them to you at this time. They are to your right, that is the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis. To your left, to my left, that is where you sit, that is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Next to the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. My name is C.T. Wright. I'm going to serve as your panel chair as well as your lead for your hearing this morning, sir. As we indicated that you are being considered to be paroled to your next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge. Based upon information that's been presented to the board, you're currently serving one sentence, and that I mean, you're currently serving as one sentence at this particular moment, and that is murder in the first degree, which we show that you were, that this sentence had its beginning on March 17, 1992. And you became parole eligible on April the 16th, 2017. Is that your understanding, sir?
Yes, sir.
And if you parole to your next consecutive sentence, this would be for sexual assault, which is an 18-year sentence, and that is, it would, of course, begin after this one has its beginning. Is that your also your understanding, sir? And you, and you also had another sentence, I believe it was concurrent with the last one, and that would be burglary second degree, and that is a 15-year sentence. Is that also your understanding, sir?
I thought it was consecutive.
Consecutive, which one did you think was consecutive, sir?
The 15 and 18. I thought there were three separate charges and three separate sentences.
Okay, 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 sir. Board members, any board members see otherwise? Okay.
In the sentencing document,
shows that it was.
It shows that the 15 is concurrent.
Yes.
It's consecutive to the murder, but concurrent to the sexual assault.
And that's what I was stating, yeah. But he says it different, but
no,
okay. But if there's some question at the end of the day, because you will not be going home, I don't believe, today at any rate, you need to take that up with your CO3, and your CO3 should work with time computation to make sure that we that you have this correct, sir. But we want you to make sure that everything is correct for you, sir, in the future. Okay, so we're going to move forward at this time, sir. I'm going to make a few comments myself, and we do have several supporters in the room, and they will have an opportunity to speak as well. And I believe that we also have in the building, not in the room, we also have some victims in the building, but they are not in the room at this time, but they can hear what is being said at this time, and they can see us on a video, just as you can see us on a video, sir. Just want you to be aware what's going on here, sir. Okay, I'm just going to make a few comments, sir. This is the way that we're going to do it. I'm going to make just a few comments. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to make comments, sir. I'm going to give the board members an opportunity to ask you questions. Then I'm going to give your supporters an opportunity to make any statements that they would like to the board after them. And then if, and I'm going to use the word if the victims see fit to speak, then they will be given an opportunity to speak. And then after that, we will give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board before the board goes into discussion and make a decision. Do you understand, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the second question, next question that I would ask, and I think I know the answer, but do you have an attorney in the room representing you at this time, sir?
I have no attorney representing me
okay.
at this time.
Just want to make sure that you're
I might have a public defender.
Okay.
And you're a mitigation specialist.
Okay, what I show is, but we'll get to this just a little later, I show that you do have your fiance, your sister, your mother, your niece, and your sponsor, your 12-step sponsor. Those are the ones, and then yes, that's who I show, that's your supporters who have signed in at this particular time, sir.
Okay.
Okay, sir. Okay, we're going to move forward. As I say, I'm just going to make a brief, very brief statement. Following my statement, then we're going to listen to you, and anything that I say, please correct it, because I'm going on basis of what I've just picked up by reading your package, and you have a substantial package here, and we commend you for having this package. This is your package that's been presented to the board, and I want to thank you for this package that you presented to the board. And I stated that you're currently serving a sentence for murder, first degree. Had this beginning, sentence beginning, back on March 17, 1992, and you became parole eligible on April 16, 2017. Okay. And if you move to your next consecutive sentence, we know that will be for sexual assault and possibly for burglary in the second degree. It seems to me that most recently, correct me where I'm wrong, that your most recent discipline would have been March 28, 2018, and been violation of visitation, and that would have been a minimum sentence, sir. What do you know what that was all about, sir? That was just about less than a year ago, sir. What was that about, sir?
I was laughing and joking with my fiance, and I poked her in the stomach, and the officer that was watching the video thought that I had grabbed her in the crotch, and when she made her IR statement, they canceled my visitation and they checked the video, and the video exonerated me from that. I did not touch her in any inappropriate way in front of any other visitors or anything like that. It was just what it was, and because an IR was written, they told me they had to give me at least the minimum sanctions. And so I served the minimum sanctions for poking her in the stomach.
Okay, now can you have visit? Can she visit you now, sir? Has that been resolved, sir?
Yes, sir. She comes every weekend, sometimes twice.
Okay, well, thanks so very much for clarifying that for the board. Also, based on information that I believe that I bring, that you appeared before this board. This will be your third time. You came before this board twice in 2017, and the most recent one would have been in, I believe, would have been in second time. You would have been here. When was the last time you were here? March of this year?
No, I think the last time I was here was November 18th or 19th of last year.
Last year, okay, November the 14th of last year. And at that time you were denied by the board at that time. I would point out the fact that based upon what I can see at that particular time, all of the current board members were present except for the Honorable Mr. Johnson. He was not present at that particular one, but he had been present with the previous one. Now, for all board members have seen you before, that's the point that I want to make, but we want to open it up so that you can tell the board anything that you want to tell the board, and the board can ask you any questions that the board members might want to raise with you during this hearing, sir. What we would like to do, I would also point out the fact that I am not looking at your progress report at this time. When was the last time you completed some classes or counseling programs, sir?
Earlier this year, I completed a welding course on television. Last year, I completed an epidemiology class for U of A.
Okay. So you've been quite active in terms of your programming. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And may I just ask also, what are your plans, sir, if this board saw fit to, well, I know this is what would happen if the board moved you to your next consecutive sentence, but just thinking ahead, if this board decided at some point to release you out, and this is not necessary for you to even talk about this one, but do you have any plans at all what would happen if once you are released, sir, out into the community?
Yes, sir.
What do you plan to do, sir?
I know that I'm sorry.
I was just saying, what would your plans be once you are released into the community, sir? Now, I like to be positive. That's why I said once you're released. I'm not going to say if you're released. I'm going to say once you are. So let's just be positive. So what would be your plans, sir?
I realize that the victim's family doesn't want me to be pleading with you not to release me, but I'm pleading with you to release me. There's a lot of circumstances. I've been incarcerated for almost 27 years now, and it hasn't all been for nothing. I believe in positivity too, and I did a lot of growing up in here, and a lot of educating myself to be the best person that I could possibly be. So that in a sense, if I ever got a chance to be reintroduced back into society, that I could be the most productive citizen that I could be. I know that they probably don't want to hear this, but I took her life. I took her life. But I'd like to honor her memory, if that's possible. And the way I've been doing that is I've used her as inspiration throughout these years to be the best that I can be. I did not come to prison to give up and be a drug abuser. I did not come to prison to be lazy or just to give up on life itself. That would not honor her memory in any way, shape, or form. And so I've chosen to want to honor her memory and to continue to honor her memory so that other people can sit there and benefit. I someday, within 2 or 3 years of getting out of prison, sir, I really, really want to start a nonprofit in her memory for senseless acts of violence or anything like that. And I know that I can sit there and effectively, positively give change to victims' families. And so, I really want to do that. So I've been, my time in prison has been to learn and to be the best I can be, to work on my virtues and just to sit there and that is my hope, that is my dream.
Okay, sir.
I'm 44 years old now, and hopefully if I'm not going to be 60 years old or whatever when I get out of prison, it'll be hard for me to sit there and do stuff like that. But I have not given up on myself, and I have not given up on her dream or my dream to sit there and do that. So yes, sir, that's...
Okay, well, thank you so very much. At least you've given a great deal of thought to what the future might hold. I believe at the time that you committed this offense, since you admit that you did commit it, you were 17 years of age at that time, sir, or thereabouts, sir?
Yes, sir.
And I believe that the victim would have been, about 47 years of age at that time, sir?
Yes, sir.
And as I just going in, I want you to really tell us what happened, but the offense took place around March 15, 1992. As I understand it, that evening you went home and your father had locked you out of the residence, and then you climbed up on the top of the roof and you slept on the roof that night, and next day you got up and you went to someone's house and washed your hands, and also had I believe that you might have had some blood on you, on your clothing, and you kind of got those all cleaned up. And then the daughter of the victim came by the victim's house and found the victim dead and had her new body, and that she had been hit all over the head with a hammer, and she had been sodomized there at the residence. And the way that you were found to have committed this crime was that they found that your DNA matched that of the victim, and they did the DNA. And as a result of that, you have been incarcerated, as you stated, since then. But really, what was going on, sir? I mean, this is, you went home, you couldn't get in to the house, because your father, according to my reading of the information presented to the board, because you were late getting home, and so you couldn't get in, so you just slept on top of the roof. So what went through your mind? What happened, sir? And how did all this take place, sir?
I was on probation for breaking in the car. cars and stuff like that. And my parents basically told me if I were not sneaking out, or caught sneaking out of the house again, that I would go to jail. And then that would be the end of it. And so when I came back home and my dad was waiting in my room, and when I tried getting back in, sneaking back in, then he caught me, and it scared me, and I ran. And I circled back, and, you know, I went on top of the roof, and I stayed there, and I couldn't stay there forever. I didn't know what to do. And so my thought process was, is it's spring break, and if I run away from home, he won't call the cops on me and send me to prison, because both my parents were school teachers. And so if I ran away and came back home just before school started, then I would get in trouble, that school would be more important. So that was my thought process on as far as that. And I had nowhere to go, and so I ended up going over to Cheryl's house. And,
just for the record, who's Cheryl, sir? What was her relationship to this whole situation, sir?
Unpopular as it is to say, I had a brief affair with this woman, and I had nowhere else to go. And when I went to her house, and one thing led to another, and we ended up having sex. But then the gravity, the way that we had sex, my brain couldn't handle it, and I went crazy. And I'm sorry. There's no forgiveness for that.
Forgive me for asking these questions. I apologize to the victims as well as to your supporters. You had a relationship with her before? Was this your first time having a relationship with her, sir?
No, that was my third time.
What's your third time?
She was having problems with her marriage, and I was having my own problems. And I turned, you know, I go by her house all the time, riding my bicycle, and we started talking, and, you know, problems, and she was consoling me, and then one thing led to another, and I wasn't ready for it at 17, and I handled it so wrong. So, I can't apologize enough to the victim's family.
I know you and I come from a different generation, sir, but how did you end up with someone who was 30 years older than you were at the time, sir? About 30 years older than you were.
We were both ready, and I have no excuse. I'm sorry, I just, brain chemicals, I don't know, being a kid, it was exciting to think about it at first, but then afterwards I just wasn't ready for it, a relationship at that time.
Was it, as you had time to reflect over these many years, was this kind of a romantic relationship, or was it, what kind of relationship was it that she was having at that time?
It was nothing to do with romance, nothing at all. It wasn't like that. She still loved her husband very much, even though he had problems.
And after you committed this, I guess what I'm trying to get, and I'm sure you explained this to the board before, I'm just trying to get in my mind, there was some type of relationship that was going on, but you ended up not just having sex, but you hit her in the head and you tied her up and all of that. How could you do that, sir, with someone that you knew?
I don't understand the tying up part. I don't understand that. She was not tied up.
She was not? Okay. What about her being hit with a hammer or some object similar to a hammer? Do you have any recollection of that at all, sir?
That was a hammer that belonged to that family. And it was in the grass outside, just like 1 foot or 2 feet off, out in front of the Arizona room. And when I came in the first time, I ended up kicking it when she let me in through the arcade doors. I wasn't ready for a relationship like that. And when we had anal sex like that, I wasn't ready for it. And my brain just shut down. I went into a dark place or a room of safety. I don't know what to say. I freaked out on it, and I grabbed that hammer, and I couldn't. I don't know what to say.
So after
I did not handle it the right way. I should have. I mean, I could have done a lot of different things. I was scared. I had nowhere to go. There was a lot of stuff going on in my head. I was going to go to prison, and I was going to sit there and meet some guy named Bubba who was going to sit there and have his way with me. And I went to her house, and I was scared to console him. One thing led to another, and then we started having sex. But afterwards, it was just, like I said, I wasn't ready for that. I was hurting and scared. I'm sorry.
This had happened. What did you do, sir? What was your next move after? I mean, you've had sex. She's been beat over the head. So what did you do next, sir?
Well, the whole basis of the affair was, no matter what, you can't tell nothing to nobody. You can't brag to your friends or anything like that. And I was good with that because I have sisters, and I wouldn't want somebody to have a relationship with my sisters and then bring to all her friends and ruin her studying at school. So I was good with that. And so when after all this happened, it didn't occur to me in my mind and my brain that, okay, she's good, now I can just go and tell everybody what happened. In my mind, it was still like, I was never here, I don't know what you're talking about. It was like that. And so I was scared. After I did it, I didn't know what to do. And I paced inside the Arizona room. And then I finally left and went back up onto the roof of my house. It was Sunday. And I was just hoping that my family would go to church that morning and I could sneak back in and grab some clothes or whatever I could grab and then be gone for the week. I was going to run away for the week and then come back home for school.
And what happened, sir? Did you run away? What happened?
I that morning, no one ever went anywhere. And I stayed up on the roof. We have an eight-story house, so it's on the backside. No one can see me. And then finally, when I realized no one's ever going to go to church or anything, I jumped back down and I went over to my friend Brian's house. And that's where I was able to sit there and effectively get a change of clothing. And his dad saw me and called my dad. And then my dad came and picked me up and brought me home. And then the detective came over.
Okay. I would just point out, just for the record, that We do have the board, that is when I say we, the board does have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office objecting to the release, the possible release of Mr. Ward. And this letter is dated, most recent one is dated December 21st, 2018. I just wanted to go on record with that. I know that this is an emotional situation, but at this time, I'm going to yield to other board members who might have some questions. Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Ward? I know that I think the important questions have been asked. I'm not trying to put you in a position to retell the story or the event. I'll begin by saying, in fairness to you, the criminal justice system is never okay with murder. Not even on the battlefield. But there's different types of murder cases, and I've heard quite a few now, and we have to look at each of them individually and look at the whole of the case. And I'm just having a difficult time understanding this case. And I'm not asking you to explain it again. I'm just telling you directly that as one voting board member, to suggest that an individual would commit such a violent and unstable act, that an individual would commit such a violent and unstable act, and that individual is okay now, is a little tough for me. So you were going to say something. Pardon me.
I'm sorry. I've gone around in circles with you guys in the past. I didn't want to say it because I didn't want you to think of it as an excuse for my behavior. I do not make excuses. I take full responsibility for my actions. But I was molested 3 times as a minor, and 2 cousins and another person from across the street. And when this happened with this woman, okay, it was exciting at first, but then it happened so fast. And when it happened again, I couldn't take part of being molested again. After the anal sex, I hurt so damn bad that I couldn't stop myself. I picked up the hammer and I unleashed everything that I was holding inside of me, my rage and everything from my childhood. And I tried to say, I did not want to sit there and say this because I did not want to hurt the victim's family. They've been victimized enough. And I did not want them to sit there and see their mom as being with a minor, a 17-year-old person who wasn't ready for this. And so when I did this horrible, unspeakable act, okay, that was why. But I'm not using that as an excuse for my behavior. Every time I come in front of you guys, you think of me as this crazy monster, this horrible, despicable person that just, it's a dog to be put down, somebody who can't be reintegrated back into society. You guys think of me as the worst person, the scourge on the planet. And I never had an excuse or a reason why. And so I just wanted to stop you right there. I'm done. My family knows that I've been molested. And so I just, when this happened again, in my mind, I was not going to sit there and be molested ever again. That was what was going on in my mind. That's why I retreated to something so horrible. And it was not fair to her. It's not fair to the victim's family. It's not fair to my family. And it's still not fair to the victim's family. And so I apologize to her. I can't stand you guys sitting there looking at me with disgust in your eyes and thinking the worst possible things. You know, and so I need to sit there, and I gotta tell you that, so I'm sorry.
Well, Mr. Ward, I do appreciate you communicating your feelings with the board. I began this by saying, in fairness, that the criminal justice system is never okay with murder, but we hear different types of cases, and we have to look at the whole of these cases and make some hard determinations on behalf of the people of Arizona whether or not an individual can be safely returned to the community. And really, that's the sort of search that I'm always on every time that I review a case. So I recognize this is emotional. I'm not in any way offended by what you shared, but you said some things that aren't necessarily the path that I'm going down. I didn't say that I was disgusted by looking at you, or I was trying to broad stroke this a bit by saying that we have to look at each of these cases individually and make some hard determinations. But we do have to look at the whole of the case, and I am listening to you, and the story is still not quite making sense of me. So I'm not going to ask you to retell it. I'm just telling you, it's a bit to digest as events go. And I'm not going to ask any further questions at this point. Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. No other questions from other board members? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So I just had a couple of questions, and I do want to say that we do not go into this, at least speaking only for myself, sir, as one board member, that we try to look at all these cases individually. I don't think any of us go into it looking at someone as a horrible human being, but we do try to go into it and look at, based on the information that we have, what was the circumstances surrounding it. With that said, there's a couple of questions I had. One of them was that in the documentation that we have, I didn't see in the documentation that we don't have all the court records. We do get a pre-sentence report that comes in to us with some information on there, along with your Ames report that we get. But when this thing was in the court system, did you divulge any of this information that you were involved in a sexual relationship with her prior to this incident occurring?
I ended up confessing way back then to my attorneys when they themselves gave me a lie detector, and they knew that I wasn't being completely honest. Mm-hmm. So I ended up telling my first initial attorneys what happened. I didn't tell them about any of the being molested or victimized myself.
Okay.
But they
did you tell them that you had been in a sexual relationship with the victim prior to this last incident occurring?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so, I know originally when you first were interviewed by the police, you denied any involvement in it at that time?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir, because of the programming, I was never here. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't beg any friends.
Mm-hmm.
That was the promise that I made her, and when she died, it did not occur to me that now I can just start the lobbying.
So
it just.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm done.
Okay. So, Mr. Ward, prior to the last incident happening, why did you have those same feelings the first two times?
Well, the first time was caught me off guard. It wasn't anything major. It was oral sex the first time.
Uh-huh.
And the second time was just a missionary. Mm-hmm. And then when I had this relationship going with her, it was, my parents told me that if you ever snuck out, then they would call the cops on me. So that scared me straight. I was not sneaking out at that point any longer. It worked because my friends would make fun of me about going to prison and meeting some guy named Bubba. And so I was being molested in the past, I didn't want to think about it, so it scared me straight. And when this happened with Ms. Webster, we couldn't do anything during the day because she had people coming over. And so it had to be before, early in the morning. And so that's why when my dad caught me at one something or two in the morning, I couldn't go anywhere. I had to go on the roof. I had nowhere else to go. And so then later on in the morning, when I knew she would be at work is when I climbed out from the house to go to her house. And, So the thing was is, I didn't do drugs, and I was depressed a lot as a kid, and so I would sneak out of the house for adrenaline rushes, and I didn't even realize why I would sneak out of the house as a juvenile until I saw a psychologist who said that that's how I treated my own depression, was with the adrenaline rush of sneaking out of the house and being chased by dogs and stuff through, you know, people's backyards and front yards and stuff. And so when sneaking out of the house right there was like going to be like a crazy, all that was wrong was like the craziest adrenaline rush I've ever felt with my dad catching me. And so I didn't know what to do. I got scared and I ran and I ended up at her house.
Okay, because there are several letters in there that was written prior. There was a lot of support that you had from friends and parents and church that supported you, but mostly, you know, all feeling that they couldn't believe that you committed this crime. So during the trial process, did you continue to deny being involved in this during the trial?
Yeah, and I'm a good person. It's just that when all this happened, it was a snowball effect. Once I started down the line, you know, I had a religious family, and you're not supposed to have sex before marriage, and all these different things, and you know, thou shalt not kill, and all this stuff, and I was pretty screwed up. I told a lie. When I finally told my attorneys, Michael Reeves and Mary Margaret, when I told them finally what happened, they told me, well, I have to keep my mouth shut. I can't sit there and tell what happened. I have to continue doing what I'm supposed to be doing, because if we went to the trial and I got up on the stand, and I wanted to go up on the stand, I wanted to sit there and say everything, but if I did, then the prosecuting attorney would rip me to shreds. I would have no credibility in the courts. I would be a liar. And so I had to remain quiet, and we kept the same defense that we had to keep, that I was never there. We had some DNA experts coming in, and that, so it got perpetuated right off the bat.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ward, I understand what you said. Well, I don't want to say I understand. I do hear what you're saying about your relationship, what has happened, that as a result of this last incident, you just kind of lost it, or...
You said that you couldn't
handle it.
The secret is that they don't want to hurt the victim's family anymore.
Okay.
They suffered enough.
Okay. You said the way that you guys had sex, that you couldn't handle it, and you went crazy. My question to you, sir, what has changed that would prevent that type of emotion from arising again within you? I mean, earlier you said...
I was a juvenile, and I was my brain chemicals were all crazy. I wasn't mature, not accountable or responsible for any of my actions. I've done a lot of growing up in prison, and I see people all over the place just giving up and not wanting to better themselves and turning to drugs and everything else like that. and I am nowhere anything like anybody else in prison. I love my family very much. I love my fiance very much. And anybody who has ever come into contact with me since I've grown up in prison and matured, they love me. I'm funny, and I'm inspirational. I lift people up. And I take all of my pain and I try to help other people so that maybe they can't sit there and come back to prison. I don't want someone who has come across me or who has known me to want to say, I want to better them too. So I try to lift up everybody around me. I live the most positive way that I can. And I've educated myself. I am not a monster. I made a horrible decision all those years ago. A horrible decision. I did not handle it the right way. But then again, I was 17. And I didn't handle a lot of things well. I didn't handle my school well. And since I've been in prison, I have rehabilitated myself to no other degree. There's nothing left that I can do except for work on my virtues to be the best that I possibly can be. I want to sit there and prove to the world and to Shirley Memory that she can count for something, that her death has meaning, and that she can affect everybody else's lives from here on out. I believe that.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Ward. Okay, thank you so very much, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions by board members? There are no further questions at this time by board members. As I said, the next group that we would go to would be your supporters. We have several supporters here, and any supporters want to come forward, you can come in the order that you wish to come. I will not make that decision for you, and if you do not wish to come forward, you do not have to, but please come forward if there's anyone who would like to come forward at this time on behalf of Mr. Ward. Yes, ma'am, please come forward. And is that green light on? Okay, but you state your name just for the record, please, ma'am.
My name is Shelley Stewart.
And please tell the board whatever you would like to tell the board at this time, and welcome.
Thank you. I am Stephen's sister, his older sister, and I just wanted to take this opportunity just to reiterate, I know I've said it in the past, that Stephen has an incredible support system. He has people that really, truly love and care about him, that visit him on a regular basis. I don't get to go as often as I like because I work, but I do go see Stephen. Do have contact. My parents go to see him almost every single weekend. His fiance has been going to see him every weekend, sometimes twice for the past, I don't know how many years and years, more than 10 years. And my parents have visited him regularly since. He corresponds with family and friends. He has kept up very positive relationships and developed new relationships with a number of people. And he just has a great support system, He's a kind, wonderful person. He does do his best to continually try to lift up the people around him. And I think he tries to be a positive influence, not only for himself, but for other people. What I see in Stephen is he tries to make sure that people are positively impacted by what he does. He doesn't want anyone to leave his presence or to be part of it without making that positive change for them. And I know that he does his best to constantly improve himself and to be impactful for the people around him. And I wanted to ensure that I love them and that he has a number of people that do. And he does have a place, in society, and people are willing to support him and uphold him to make sure that long term that he's got people that care.
Yes, ma'am. I'll just ask this. Did he say anything today that surprised you, or you were already prepared for what he said to this board today, ma'am?
I knew everything that he said.
Board members, any questions? Thank you so much, Mr. Stewart, for coming.
Thank you.
Just for very helpful. Thank you. is your name?
Lauren Ward.
And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. And what do you wish to tell the board this morning?
I just want to say, I'm 23 and that's my uncle, and I don't know him when this happened. I have him before I was born, but he's been basically like my father figure since I was a kid. And I've got my own mental health issues, and I know he's helped me more than most people, more than a counselor has, because I've always felt like that I could just talk to him about anything, and that when I don't want to tell my mom something, he'll tell her. But I would always, when I was younger, and still do, tell him any and everything going on, and he's like the one person that can always help.
Thank you. Let me see if board members might have any questions. Board members, any questions? I don't believe there are any questions from board members. Thank you so very much for coming. Good morning. And may I ask you just to state your name for the record?
Cheryl Ward.
Yes, ma'am. And what would you like to tell the board, Mr. Ward?
I would like to say that that was a horrible thing that happened. But it happened a long time ago. I'm his mother, and I've always been close with him. And he is a wonderful person. I don't exaggerate. He's a wonderful person. He does things for people. One little example of the things that he did is a couple of years ago, he had a couple of pieces of colored paper, and he cut them up into little tiny squares, folded them in half, and wrote Christmas cards for everybody in his unit, whatever they call them, you know. And it was a lot. It was way over 100. I don't know how many it was, but it was for everybody. And there were guys that cried to him and said, you know, how many years they've been there, and they had never had a card given to them. And it just cheered a lot of people up. Well, he does things like that, and he did as a little kid. He always was trying to do something to make somebody feel good. And, you know, basically, he's a good person. He fell apart. He did a terrible thing. I understand that. I don't approve of it. You know, we were so disappointed. But yeah, he did come clean with us. He did tell us everything that happened. And I want you to know that he has a place in our home. I have a bedroom sitting there waiting on him to come home. He has job plans. He's taken every class that he could possibly take in that prison to improve himself. And I have a place for him. I'm sure that he's a go-getter. He's a worker. When he was little, one time he played soccer, and he was quite a good soccer player, and his team was elected to go to Brazil for a couple weeks for a big soccer tournament down there. And he worked in the summertime. He had a newspaper route. He washed windows, he washed cars, he sold Easter bunnies, chocolate, he sold Christmas things, chocolate, he sold calendars, he sold cups. He earned about $2,800 that summer. And I worked extra too. We didn't have very much money, but I worked extra jobs too to pay for my ticket. He gave me $100 spending money. And he still had $600 to put in the bank to save after that. And it took like 9 months that he worked and worked and worked. He is a worker. He's a go-getter. He likes to do things, and he likes people. He loves people. He's always... another example was the little old ladies in our church. He decided to... that he was talking to them, and his friend was a pastor's son. And so they were talking to those little old ladies, and I said to him, and then he, every now and then, you know, he'd give one a hug and pat them on the back, And but he and Trent were going around to all of these ladies in the church. And so I said, Stephen, what's going on? You know, I noticed that you and Trent are shaking all the ladies' hands and hugging them and talking to them a little bit. And it wasn't very long that he talked to them, you know, a minute or 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And he said, Mom, do you know they don't have anybody? And so I just thought, if I could show a little kindness to them, so I tell them how pretty their dress is and their hat, or some kind of compliment to make them feel good. And they have opened up to me, and they've been so warm and so grateful that I do those things for him, for them. And so anyway, I mean, that's just a couple of things that he's grown up being a good kid. He made mistakes, he made bad mistakes, and I don't excuse that. I don't. But I do know that he's a person worthwhile getting to know, and I know that he would be successful if he got out. I think it's too bad that he didn't get to become a teacher, because he was so good with young kids. He was good with everybody. And he had a lot of friends. A lot of friends now have gone on and passed away, you know, that knew him in the church. But there's still a few out there that'll be willing to come and testify before you or anybody that he was a good person. I think he has a lot of possibilities in life. He doesn't wait too long. I mean, right now he's still full of energy, and he could still get out and make something of himself and do something for other people in the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. Any questions, board members? Thank you so very much. Thank you, ma'am. Good morning, sir. And would you state your name for the record, sir?
I got released from the Department of Corrections several years ago, and I've been working 12-step program. And while I was in, Mr. Ward, I'm amazed how far he's come. I'm proud to call him my friend, and proud to be his sponsor. I have never seen anybody that had worked so hard to become a better person in my life. I sponsor a lot of people. Even out here, since I've been out, I sponsor people. And I don't think Ward is probably the golden child when it comes to staying with the program and becoming a better person. You know, I think about, you know, the innocence of a 17-year-old, our mind back in those days. You know, all of us were the same generation, basically. And I just, you know, I look at the statistics and everything, and I know it takes sometimes a village to raise a child. This gentleman is so remarkable. How far he's come in the decades, I know. He is very inspirational to everybody around him within the system. I have watched him sit on that yard, watched him, the kindness he has given others. This gentleman has got a spirit of God in him that's unreal. I'm astonished that, you know, I look at the 17-year-old mind and what we were back then, and, you know, this heinous crime, it's unspeakable. And the victims and what they've been through, and how many other victims that it has affected, the families, his friends, the community, because he is one remarkable person. For years and years, I have been around Mr. Ward inside. I've learned that he's even made me a better person. And that's pretty hard, because when you work 12-step, especially step 12, you know, you carry the message to others that are still suffering. And learning his past and before the incident occurred, I look how the mind molds and shapes and stuff like that, because I deal with so many people that I sponsor. But when it came to Mr. Ward, it still boggles me. And to this day, what I've seen, how something so negative has come out so positive and carried the Spirit of God in like he does, it's unreal. I can't, it's speechless. I watch him take programs. I see him put 100% in everything he does to become a better person. The kindness that something negative like that has grown to, a very mature, a person that's inspiration to others around him. I know he's only going to his next number. And the words, I have so much to say, but I think I have taken up the Honorable's time as it is. But in my opinion, you guys denied me many times, but look what I came out to be. You know, a peer to the community. You know, I help others, and in my opinion, this is one person that should be able to go to his next number. I was never given an opportunity, but I still fight to a person like Mr. Ward that has 10 times the inspiration to become a better person. This is one vote, I think, that should be going on to the next number. Because I think you will never regret this decision, my personal opinion. And I thank you, Honorables, for giving me the time to speak.
Thank you so very much, sir. Any questions for board members? I see no questions. Okay, thank you. Anyone else wishes to address the board? Anyone else wishes to address the board? Anyone else wishes to address the board? Okay, thank you. Do you have anything on your end? Would you mind coming forward and stating your name for the record?
Hello, my name is Carrie Garrison. I'm a victim advocate with the Arizona Department of Corrections. I just want the board to know that the eldest son of Charlotte, the deceased victim, Brent Webster, is here today. He does not have it within him to be inside the room today, and did not want to address the board directly. He was at the last hearing, so he did get to say what he felt then, and the family feels the same today. They are absolutely opposed to any early release for the inmate, and they do ask for a one-year set-off. Okay. So, any questions?
Thank you. Any questions, board members? There are no questions from board members. Thank you so very much for coming today. And please convey that to the family. We appreciate their sending the message. Okay, board members, any board members have any further questions for Mr. Ward at this time? I see no questions coming from Mr. Ward at this time. Mr. Ward, at this time, we're coming towards the end of your hearing. However, we give you the opportunity to make the final statement to the board on your behalf. So at this time, we're going to open it up, and following your statement, then the board will go into discussion and make its decision after your statement, sir. So at this time, feel free to tell the board anything that you would like to. We do ask for time management purposes that you do not repeat yourself. But otherwise, you're prepared to listen, sir.
I want to thank you all to listen to me to come before you and to say what I would say. And I appreciate what you guys are doing for the victim's family and for me. You know, it goes both ways. And I am not a mistake. I believe in my heart that if you were to bless me and my family with an opportunity for parole or release, that you will never, ever question or doubt your decision. I will not make you regret anything, because I'm sincere. I am so sincere with who I am today and what I want to accomplish. And so I thank you. I will never come back to prison ever again. And if 18 years. You know, I'd be too old to ever sit there and have you question me, getting out and hurting anyone else again. But you do know today that I'm sincere and thankful. So I appreciate you letting me be here and my family be here for me.
Thank you so very much. At this time, the board has gone into discussion. We're going to ask that you remain quiet and those in the room to remain quiet as well. I recognize the fact that this is an emotional situation. And as a board member, we all think and vote independent of each other. We've not discussed this case until we are sitting right up here. So you can do everything that we say and everything that we think. We do not do anything behind closed doors. As part of the Arizona Board's mandate, as a part of the open meeting law, we cannot discuss anything behind closed doors. We cannot talk to each other about it. We vote and we think independent of each other. Therefore, each of us will speak on our own behalf, if we so desire, and not on behalf of any other board member. We always try to be as a board, and I believe that we are as a board. We always try to be fair. We always try to take into consideration the offenders, the victims, as well as the citizens of the state of Arizona in making our decisions. So now the board is in discussion. This has been a very emotional hearing that we've had. It is one of those that it's hard to digest. I would be one to say yes, I believe that Mr. Ward has made some progress over the years. He's not the same as he was when he went into the system. And I think that that's quite evident. He articulates well. He said things to the board that I think that's very emotional and kind of tell us who he is and where he is at this particular time. However, as one board member, I like to think what is best for the offender, for the victims, for the citizens of Arizona. I think that at this particular time, and I'm only speaking as one board member, I just cannot comprehend as one board member what happened back in 1992. And I would like to be able to comprehend before I could make a determination whether Mr. Ward should be moved to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. That's just my feeling as one board member. And I'm going to open it up to other board members for their discussion. Board members. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I agree with you. I really can't comprehend or begin to understand what happened with the crime. And I can't imagine what the victim's family must feel about it. At the same time, I see the progress that Mr. Ward has made, and it is truly significant, more than I would say in my time serving on this board. He really has done an exceptional amount of programming in different areas, and I believe has really taken every opportunity to try to improve himself. Just speaking as her absent colleague, Mr. Neal, would often say, if the board were to parole him to his next sentence, then the victims would not have to re-experience this for 18 years during that sentence for the portion of the sentence that he would not be eligible for parole. They would not be put through these hearings every year. The family would not be put through these hearings every year. And at the end of that sentence, Mr. Ward would revert back to his life sentence and have to appear before the board again before he is released to the streets. So for that reason alone, and that reason in the amount of improvement and sincere programming that I see on the part of Mr. Ward, I could possibly recommend a parole to a consecutive sentence for those reasons, as I stated. Thank you, Dr. Wright.
Thank you so very much. Board members, Honorable Mr. Johnson.
I can't quite grasp the crime itself and the statement that the way they had sex, he just couldn't handle it and went crazy. I'm just could have some leeway. I think he's done some exceptional things. I mean, from the beginning, even in the psychological evaluations that we had were all good, that he had inside report, that there's been family support, church support. He's had his mother's here, his sister has spoke, his niece has spoke, and then had a friend, Mr. Biggs, I believe that was the name, that testified that, you know, how he's been since he's been incarcerated and the lives that he has actually touched since he's been there. I think I do see some change in what has happened. I know the pre-sentence report, originally it was saying that the police had framed him and planted the evidence, and was what it was in the beginning, but, you know, obviously that's not true, and he's taking a different look. I tell you that right now I'm just kind of, I do have some concerns, but I do understand that he's paroled. He would be paroled to two consecutive sentences. He has one's a 15-year sentence, one's an 18-year sentence. That's both are going to be running concurrent to each other. That the victims wouldn't have to keep coming to the court. According to the information, the victim had three jobs, so I'm just not sure about her having an affair. But, you know, he wasn't there when this incident occurred, so just I'm still a little bit on the fence on this one.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Kalinas, sir.
Thank you, Doctor. I think I'm going to say something very similar. I recognize that there's an effective rationale for considering parole for the next consecutive sentence. And I'm willing to look at some factors. One, that he was 17 years old, and I take the maturity and brain development issues into consideration. His personal development inside the Department of Corrections, which is exceptional. But that's weighed against the concern for the victims in their fierce opposition to parole, the very heinous nature of the crime, and I think part of the one that's causing me the biggest struggle is questions in the accounting of the event with no witnesses or any speaker for the death, so to speak. And I think that's, in balancing this out, the one that is causing me the most problems. I'm not showing disregard for the maturity and the development issue, but I'm really struggling with the with reconciling the instant offense. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Further discussion by board members? There's no further discussion by board members. I'm going to offer a motion, and remember that if the motion does not pass, a board member can offer a counter motion. But I'm just going to offer a motion as chairing this hearing, and my motion is going to be to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge, and that is my motion.
Second.
Motion by C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis.
I agree.
Agreed by the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
I'll agree.
And agreed by the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse, by unanimous determination by this board, that is Mr. Stephen Ward, ADC number 108103, parole to his next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge has been denied. And the type of denial is 412B, 411. Reasons for denial, and please help me in disagree, seriously violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant behavior, trauma to the victim, serious bodily behavior, injury, violation of parole and probation, that is because he was on probation, that's the reason I'm including that one. Prior criminal history. He has support. He has family support, community support, in my opinion. He has programming. That's why I would not draw up any of that. Those would be the ones that I would include, but are there others that any board member wish to include or not to include? And hearing none, you heard the determination, Mr. Ward, of this board, the unanimous vote of this board. You have been denied parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Any board member have any objection to a one-year set-off since this offense took place in 1992? Hearing none, and I'm going to a one-year set-off, which means that you will be certified by the Department of Corrections in about a year from now, not necessarily on this date, but about a year from now, to appear before this board again. I gave the reason for the denial. Do I need to repeat anything, Mr. Ward, at this time, sir?
No, sir. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you so very much, sir. The board will be looking forward to seeing you in about a year from now. Good luck, and we hope that you have a successful 2019. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to the supporters for being here, and thanks to the victims who did not come in the room but who sent a message to the board. This will end the hearing, and the hearing is over at this time. Thank you.